Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. This is The Mechanic, the remake of the iconic early 70s film with Charles Bronson. This version stars Ben Foster and Jason Statham. This is Action Movie Anatomy. We're going to break it down for you. Hang out with us. We'll see you in just a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is some calm music right now.
This is sexy.
Yeah, this must be like the theme music or something. This is better than the film.
This is better.
Just kidding.
We kid. We jest.
We jest. Guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. This is the show where we talk about action movies on the Popcorn Talk Network, which is the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie related. This is episode, probably almost episode 70, I would guess. We're getting close to it.
67, 68, something like that.
I'm your host, Ben Bateman. This, over here in a brand new suit, is Mr. Andrew Guy.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah. Hey, guys, I'm Andrew Guy, your movie guy.
You like that?
Your movie guy.
It's my last name. Turned into a...
Did you...
I just thought of that.
Because it's the FBI.
Because it's the FBI. And, so got a new suit. Feeling good in it. And I love Ben Foster and Jason Statham.
Yeah.
So, you know, The Mechanic.
The Mechanic. Yes, The Mechanic, 2011. One of the few films in the last few years that looks like The Mechanic that was a full-scale theatrical release. Like, it's... Movies like this, like and Statham movies, movies like that are like star vehicles for guys like that, they're often VOD now. I feel like Killer Elite or movies like that, they just kind of, they come and go. I feel like you see them at Redbox or on Amazon or Netflix, and you're kind of like, I didn't ever see this come out. And in a lot of cases, a lot of them don't actually ever come out.
This movie feels like that for me. Like, I'm shocked that it had a theatrical release.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was totally, I remember this being advertised. Mm-hmm. I remember playing on ESPN between sports games. Like,
yeah, and it was 2011 as well. So you got to remember that Jason Statham's star was a little higher for sure. He was just in the first Expendables. And I can't remember if he was just in Fast Five or not.
He shows up at the end of Six, right? But then he's in Seven as the main villain.
Right, right.
So that's probably a few,
So he's still doing great. You know, he's had all of his solo man franchises that he's done.
Yep.
So I can see why it was a big deal for it to be released in theaters with Ben Foster, but it's one of those movies now when you watch it.
Yeah.
I'm very shocked that they're doing a sequel, you know, 6 years later.
6 years later.
2011?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless it. It's 5 years later.
Five years. Yeah.
Wild. Yes.
I'm not good at math.
I didn't do well in that class. So guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy, and we talk about action movies here. Those action movies usually have four basic rules. You know what I realized after last week's show is that we didn't do the rule breakdown for Lone Survivor.
I know.
We just missed it.
I thought that you didn't do it because you didn't think it adhered to our rules, so I thought you just skipped over it.
Oh, got it.
So I didn't say anything.
Huh.
But it kind of did.
Yeah, in some ways.
You know.
You guys should check out the Lone Survivor episode. We did it last week.
You guys really should. It hasn't been tracking. It's a great film, and it's a really good episode because we're just so excited about it.
Yeah, we love that movie. That was an awesome movie. But this movie, The Mechanic, I think it hits all the rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. So Statham definitely plays by his own rules. Even his protege, Ben Foster, plays by his own rules.
Definitely.
The hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. Sure. Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, Tony Goldwyn is like cunning. I mean, he's kind of an idiot villain in the sense that, like,
he's the villain that you have to have in these type of movies. Like, you can't have a villain. You can't have the end guy be another super assassin in these type of movies.
Yeah.
It might be better if he was.
Yeah.
But they never do it. It's always a douchebag in a suit that's at the top of the food chain that has like 50 guys around him and he's just a pussy.
It's the guy from John Wick.
Yeah. It's all of them.
Same actor who was in Mission Impossible 4. Yeah, so the guy from Mission Impossible 4, I think, was the smartest guy in the room otherwise, because he was brilliant.
Yeah, he actually was, but he was just useless.
Yeah, they usually are. And Tony Goldwyn is a useless shitweasel.
Yes,
so,
he is.
Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police military... The character played in this film is a useless shitweasel. Tony Goldwyn...
Yeah,
no
Tony
slight.
Goldwyn is awesome.
Great dude, I've actually met him. Nice guy.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Three, the movie is driven by police, military, or political figure, so... Or mercenary.
Mercenary. Yeah.
He's a mercenary.
He's definitely a mercenary. He's a hitman.
Yeah, mercenary. So there's that's that. And rule number four, the movie
sometimes
can end a minimum.
Make things look like an accident.
Yeah. That was really good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Have you been practicing your Statham?
No.
I've been practicing your Statham. I've been practicing my Statham quite a bit.
The movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely. There's a bunch of explosions in this film. So there you go. That is the rules of Action Movie Anatomy. If you guys want to follow along with the conversation, those are the rules. I'm reading. ridiculous with the way that I say those things.
Those are the rules. Those are the rules.
Let's give out our Twitters if you guys want to follow along. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy. I'm on Twitter and I'm also on Instagram now.
Ooh.
Got 200 followers. It's a big deal.
Except you're not at Andrew Guy on
Instagram. I'm not, but if you type in my name, Andrew Guy, it'll be the first thing that pops up.
It's the Corindian?
It's Andrew Guy. It is the Corindian. For those of you who don't know, I'm Korean and Indian, and I think it's clever.
I think it's very clever. The movie guy. The Corindian.
The movie guy. Look, I'm trying to start these cool catchphrases for myself.
I'm trying really hard here. Anyway, guys, and also the podcast itself, at AMA Podcast, if you guys want to follow along the conversation. We do a question every week on the show, AMA Question of the Day, and that is about the movie we're doing. So we post that on our Twitter. If you guys want to submit them, we will read the question live and then have like a mini debate at the end of the show referencing your question. So
absolutely, and we love your guys' interaction. We're getting more and more of it every single week. So let's just keep that rolling, guys, at AMA Podcast. Let's get into our first thing, brother.
Let's watch the trailer.
Yeah.
Not a great trailer.
No.
What I do?
Speedboat shot.
A certain mindset.
My Jason Statham's not bad.
I do assignments. Designated targets. Some jobs need to look like accidents. Best jobs are the ones nobody ever knows you were there.
That part's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Yeah, it's cool.
There's no one better.
Terrifying.
Than you,
yeah.
You're a damn machine.
Donald Sutherland is very good at dying in movies. Like, is it the score that he dies in as well?
Sutherland? No, I don't think
it's the score. Italian Job.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
That's Brando in the score.
Harry McKenna sold this company out.
Shit, it
must
weasel.
Be a mistake.
You know how this company works, Mr. Bishop. He had to be removed.
Did you think he was going to cap Sutherland?
It was 100%. Yeah. Well, I without even seeing the movie, I knew exactly what was going on from the minute that McKenna's like, or he's like, McKenna sold you out. You're like, he's going to kill him. He's going to find out later. Was that the revenge? That's how it's going to end.
Yep.
But did you see the double twist at the end coming?
Hitman.
With the thing at the end? Yes. With the car?
Yeah, and the roll.
Yeah. Oh, the roll
out and the car. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what's the plan now? Time to finish the job.
Pretty impressive, huh?
They show the entire movie.
My best teams.
In the trailer.
I'll have to send more.
All the best action scenes.
Save the fuel. We're coming for you.
Well, they don't show the best action scene, actually.
No, they don't.
Which is good.
They show the sex scene, which is integral to the plot.
It's very important. It's very necessary to be in the film.
You think you can get to me before I get to you?
Oh, yeah, Parker. That was another one. That he was in.
I already have.
Yeah. I already...
I was watching that scene... The sex... Okay, this would just destroy you, by the way. Just falling from the building. And,
oh, yeah. You're getting caught with the rope?
Yeah.
It would break all your ribs.
Yeah, snap.
Yeah. Snap your back. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like collapse your spleen.
Didn't even, like, do the whole glove thing to slow it down. Or it was just lazy on that. Yeah. Yeah, I was watching the sex scene, and I was just like, this must be really uncomfortable for both of them.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, really gratuitous.
Yeah.
And it's out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then she's never really in the movie again except for once. And
she shows up again.
Yeah.
She was pretty hot, though.
She was.
She was cute.
I mean, if we're going to look at the silver lining. Yeah. Okay, so that's the trailer. And we are going to move right into our very first game.
Yeah, so this film was called The Mechanic, a reference to the fact that he is a mechanic, which is code for hitman. I did gather, right, that he uses some service where it's like mechanic needed. And that's like the code for hitman needed, right? It's like some it was like a newspaper.
Yeah, it was mechanic was needed.
Yeah, which is sort of cool. I thought that was kind of a cool angle. But had this movie not been called The Mechanic, because ultimately it doesn't suggest anything other than cars.
Yeah, it could be the cleaning squad. You know, it could be, you know, there's so many stupid names for it.
Yes. So what we have done is come up with our own stupid name.
Bang!
Yeah. In a game we call the name game.
The name game.
So if you guys think anything here is awesome and you would like to add your own names to the conversation on the YouTube chat or tweet them at us, share your thoughts for the name game. I like my name game.
Yeah, I have the live chat open, guys. So please post in there because Ben is very, very proud of his name this week. And I'm very curious to see what it is. So I'm going to go first.
Okay.
And it's a callback to a quote from a movie and from Shakespeare, Sins of the Fathers. That's what it is. Fathers? Sins of the Father. Sins of the Father.
Father.
Yeah.
Singular.
Yes.
That's good. I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Sins of the Father.
Sins of the Father. You had to say it like that.
What could Sins of the Father also be about? A pedophile priest?
It could be a lot. Yeah, definitely. I think that's the best one. Or it could be about Madoff. Sins of the Father, man. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could be anything. It could be any type of movie.
Okay.
It's a good title.
My first thought was Son of a Gun, which is not what I used.
Very good.
Yeah. But the one I ended up going with was My Father's Gun, which
is a call to a song.
Yeah, it is.
I know it is.
But there's aside from a TV movie made in like... aside from like a TV movie in like 2002,
mm-hmm.
It's never been the title of a film. And it works perfectly for this.
Oh, because Jason Statham,
I'm aware it's an Elton John song.
Do you want me to sing a whole song?
I wouldn't like you to do that. Because Jason Statham is like Harry McKenna's gun for hire.
I like that we both went to the dads.
Yeah, but also Ben Foster has his father's gun, which is what ultimately
very literal
clues
him.
So I thought it was one of those, it's a double entendre.
It's a double entendre. I think that's good.
It's pronounced pendulum.
I think it's better than mine, but not by much, guys. Yeah. Not by much.
My
which means you
father's
can,
gun.
My father's gun and Sins of the Father. Donica, you got a quick one to throw in there or no? He's dead.
He died.
Oh, the mic broke. No, I don't have one.
You guys did the mechanic. I refuse to comment.
I refuse to talk to you. Mark B. Donica in the booth, everybody. Okay, so I've got your chat open. Let's see if you guys have another great title for us.
And while you're doing that, we're going to move into thesis statement. Guys, thesis statement's the part of the show where we kind of introduce like a big, bold thought, something sort of almost like rooted in hyperbole. It's just like something very, very definite you're feeling about this film. It usually shouldn't be too personal, like this is my favorite this, mm-hmm. Or this is one of the coolest this. It should be like, this movie is this, it's the first this, the greatest this, the only this. And you kind of defend it all throughout. So I'm going to jump in here first. And my thesis statement for this film is that the presence of Ben Foster in The Mechanic elevates it from an unwatchable action film to a passable action film. And I don't even mean Ben Foster because he's good in the movie. And he is good. Ben Foster's a great actor. But it's just the fact that he is in the movie as the other lead.
Your verbiage for that is very good.
Yeah.
It's said very well, and I agree wholeheartedly.
Like, seeing the trailer, like, for instance, we would not have done this movie on this show mm-hmm. if Ben Foster hadn't been in the movie. No. Because we aren't going to do Crank. We won't do Parker. We're not going to do the... We might do the Transporter Sunbeam, maybe, but that's a stretch, only because it was so successful that it spawned, like, three sequels.
Yeah, I think of all the other franchises, and we're going to get into this later with our question of the day, I think of all the other ones... Yeah, Transporters, I think, got to be the one, right?
That would be the one I would think to do. Yeah. But this just, something about this movie had a little bit more of the feel of like, okay, like the trailer for this and seeing it when it was advertised on TV, Ben Foster's in it, Statham. Like, this could have been a really, really, really fucking sweet movie.
Yeah, I think I'm coming up with a new thesis as we're talking about
it.
Yeah. Because it could have been, and it should have been. But,
it didn't do that much wrong is the thing. It's like, it's more like it's the feel of the movie. Mm-hmm. It has the same tone as a lot of the movies in the 90s that we liked. It just doesn't have it. It's missing it.
So I'm going to jump in with my thesis because that's the exact new thesis that I've just come up with. And it does have a lot of the same things in the 90s. My thesis is that this film would have been 10 times more successful in the 90s. I would have loved it. It would have been more critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
And it would have been...
It would have been Bruce Willis in the Statham role.
And then who was like a young, hot kid back then? Like, it could have even been someone like Norton or Pitt, you know?
Or like River Phoenix.
Yeah, or River Phoenix.
It would have been like River Phoenix or Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Depp. I think Depp's a good one.
It would have been like 1993 Johnny Depp and like 1993 Bruce Willis.
And that would have been so good.
Yeah.
And it would have been a classic, and it would have been a movie that would have been remade, that would have had a sequel within a few years. Whereas now, when movies come out in 2011, we expect more or less as an audience.
Yeah.
We either want more story, more things that keep it grounded and real, that make it a real movie.
Yeah.
Or we want less, like Crank, like Transporter, like The Expendables. Yeah. We want a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously. And I think that this film falls victim of that thing that we always talk about.
Yeah.
And that's when an action movie takes itself just a little too seriously.
Yeah, it definitely feels like it's not... It's trying to do both things. It's trying to be a little too dramatic, but it's also not being quite ridiculous enough.
If they would have added like more gravity to the relationship, and if they would have built the tension between Foster
and
Statham throughout the whole film,
yep,
to where it's like every scene Foster could just cap Statham,
yeah,
I think that would have helped.
Yeah, the twist at the end was like one of those twists where, like, when he finds the gun,
yeah,
where you're like, we all saw this coming. Of course, he was eventually going to find out. If he had found out earlier, it would have been much better.
Yeah,
but whatever. I mean, we're not here to shit on this movie. It's an enjoyable enough movie to do on the show.
No, so. We're here to do our jobs and like critically analyze the film. But we still loved it. It's still fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys who were like had their heyday back in the day and are doing like ridiculous things now, have you seen the trailer yet for Jean-Claude Van Johnson on Amazon Prime?
Kind of.
Yeah.
I think I saw it in the background and at the very end of it. I was like, wait, what was this?
So I watched about the first half of it yesterday.
Okay.
The premise to Jean-Claude Van Johnson is that... in fact, Jean-Claude Van Damme in the 90s was a black ops agent, and his cover was that he was a movie star, and he...
Oh, I was like, this is not real.
Yeah.
Okay, but I...
And so the story is that he comes out of retirement to, like, rejoin black ops, but he still has to go back to, like, being in movies as his cover.
Okay.
Like, his, like, hairdresser was, like, his... That's, like, his liaison to the missions.
It's, like, his cue.
But he
was
in love with her, and she, like, left, so he comes back to get her back, and that's why he's, like, over the hill rejoining black ops.
Yes.
But like at the beginning of the thing, he's like doing the voiceover, and he's like, it's like slow piano music, and he's like, my name is Jean-Claude Van Damme. You may have seen my first starring role in Bloodsport or the movie Time Cop, which is like Looper with Bruce Willis, except way, way better. It's like, it's pretty sweet. I was like definitely pretty entertained.
Oh, that's great.
I think you should watch it.
I will 100% will watch it.
I was laughing, and
you know how I feel about Looper.
Yeah, it's like really pretty funny.
Right,
Jean-Claude, the guy in the ramen shop, like mistakes him. He's like, "Oh my god, where you been, man?" He's like, "You're Nicolas Cage, right?"
Oh god,
yeah, it was pretty sweet. Anyway,
freaked.
You should watch the film. I recommend it to anybody watching this. So let's move on.
Wait,
to
what was yours?
The Ben Foster
elevator. That was it. Okay, yeah. Right, yeah.
So let's move on, guys, to fist bump moment. Fist bump moment's that moment in the film where something happens and you're just like, man, this is fucking sweet.
Yeah.
You're like, God, you're looking around, you're like, is anybody else seeing this right now? Because I can't believe I get to watch the rest of this movie. This is just awesome.
You got to rewind it real quick because you're like, I didn't get to enjoy it fully.
Can be anything. Can be an explosion. Can be a headshot. Can be the credits. Can be the music. Can be a touching look between a father and a son or Nick Nolte looking over at Joel Edgerton and Warrior in that touching moment.
In the nod. Flown back out just for a nod.
Go watch the Warrior episode, guys.
Please do. And the Lone Survivor one, since someone's just saying that they love that movie in the chat. Go watch it.
Fist bump moment. So I think the sweetest moment in this movie, my fist bump moment, is when Ben Foster goes to take on the 6'7",
350-pound...
Like, yeah, who likes little boys, I guess.
Yeah, he's like a big bear that... I mean, he doesn't like little boys. He just likes, you know, like, look at Foster. He looks, like, younger and tiny.
Yeah, so the question is, here's what I was, like, just sort of, like, failing to understand. So if he kills, like, underage boys,
mm-hmm.
or...
I don't think he does that.
Right?
I didn't get that.
Right, so then if he's just a real big guy that likes younger guys and he's gay...
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand why that meant that he had to die. I guess he was just a mark.
Oh, no, he was a hitman for their counter...
Got it.
Association or whatever.
I was trying to understand, like, when he was explaining it, he's like...
Yeah, no. I had to rewind it, too, because I was like, wait, are they just killing this guy because he's gay?
Yeah.
I was like, is this 2011? So yeah. I went back and I was like, oh, he works for another... Okay, all
right. He's 6'7", 300 pounds, and lethal. Do not get in his car.
Yeah. Do not get in his car. Yeah. And then he's like, shows him... I was stoked in that moment, because what I forgot to tell... everybody about this movie was that I've seen this movie a couple times and I've forgotten everything about it until it's happening. And I don't know if that's, I think that's just a tribute to whatever I was under the influence of at the time.
Sure.
Look, I drink. I remember this slowly unraveling as it happened. I had like flashes of the scene in my mind.
Yeah.
When he got in the car, I was like, oh yeah, here we go. Like this is the scene. You have it, right?
Yeah, let's cue it up.
Yeah, let's watch this.
The fight's sweet. It's what I like about fights like this is it's just like,
it's just raw and gritty and real and brutal.
Well, it's not real because Ben Foster would have broken every rib. Like, he wouldn't survive like three of these hits.
No.
And the head smash,
dude's 350 pounds. Like, he is gigantic. I do like the fighting.
Yeah, it's sweet.
yeah. dead.
Already, that's like, all right, I'm rattled. He'd be like, so it's like, you're rattled. Yeah. That, at that point, you're like, all right.
When he throws him through the wall bookshelf yeah. and it falls on him, that's when you're like, oh, dude.
That's
oh,
the one right there. The dance.
That's so good.
Fridge dance. It's like, holy moly. This is sweet. Yeah. This is sweet.
Whole six.
Yeah. That's one of the best moments. Oh, that's the one. He'd be out, right?
Yeah, oh, he'd be done. And done again.
I mean, he's behind the fridge, so maybe he survives that one. But that was just like, how do you get up from that?
I just love it. I love this fight.
Yeah, it's a sweet fight.
Yeah.
Oh! Screwdriver.
And I, what I love, too, is that the guy's so big.
He's like a bear.
He's a bear. It's like, it hurts, but he's not slowed down yet.
Yeah.
Ah. Right here, he's kind of like, you see the big guy like, oh god, and the glass,
but he gets back up,
of course.
Oh yeah, this is like, this is memorable.
This is so sweet.
Yeah,
if there was two more of these in the movie,
yeah
and just done.
The one question about this scene is how he manages to kill him and like stab him to death and like put the thing in his mouth, but like his blood and like DNA is everywhere.
Yeah.
He's got fingerprints all over everything. So what are they like, this, do we just don't see the scene where they dispose of the guy's body and what, clean his house? Because otherwise, like,
you think that's so interesting that you say that, because in a movie like this, you're just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But to counter that, you look at John Wick.
Yeah.
And even though it's so cheesy and corny, like, I need a cleaning crew, I've got six people coming over yeah. for dinner, and it's just, it's cheesy, but it's awesome.
Yeah, they come in, they clean everything.
Clean everything, and he pays them with a gold coin, and it just makes more sense.
Yeah.
It's those small steps that elevate a movie.
100%. 100%. So that is my fist pump moment. Also the naked chick, because I think it was sweet. She's
it was
hot.
Sweet. And it got? Was just, like, gratuitous. Mine is that sweet moment when he comes back to that little like harbor, or that like where he yeah. stores his boat, and he see, you know, his, he can tell something's up and his buddy's dead. So it's when he's in the water and he pops up behind the dude and like javelins him in the back yeah. of the calf, and he kind of like crumbles backward, and then he just snaps his neck.
Yeah.
Like pulls it back real hard. Or no, he hits it and you're just like, oh God, dead.
Yeah.
Like so dead. You are the deadest person yeah. in this movie.
Yeah.
And I rewound it three times because I thought it was so awesome.
There's some good kills.
There are.
Some very, very graphic kills. A lot of shooting guys directly in the face.
Yep.
I also really like the scene when they're hiding in the wall.
Yeah.
I like the scene when they're hiding in the wall and he's got the gun right over the guy's face. Take it off the wall. Bang!
Just, yeah, that's actually a sweet escape. And
they're in the walls! Matrix callback.
Yeah, they're in the walls. I think that this movie does really suffer the most from the steps in between the action, because we always talk about that on the show.
Yeah.
In our favorite action movies, it's not the action that's so sweet.
Totally.
It's the scenes in between
yeah.
that ground those action scenes and make them so badass. And I think that might be what this film was missing.
Well, yeah.
It's a good film.
It's missing, like, some really incredible, like, think about if this movie had Bruce Willis, right? Let's just even say you put Willis now. I mean, I think Willis is pretty past his prime, but, like, let's just say you decide to put Willis in the movie now,
mm-hmm.
and it's Foster. So same thing. The caliber of actor and like the Foster and Willis,
yeah.
you could have written some like intense scenes. God, this movie would have been so much better if he had found out early and was like,
right. I think that's the biggest detriment of this whole movie, is that he didn't, like, take everything away that we've said about this movie
yeah.
and the negativism, and just do that one thing.
Because in the tension, and Foster's so good, it would have just, like,
you've got a fantastic actor. Like, we've said this last week on Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
Go watch the episode. that he will win an Academy Award in his life, most likely. Of everyone in that film,
yeah.
he is the most likely to win an Academy Award in his lifetime.
If I was going to make a, like, if we did, like, the top 20 actors right now
yep.
to win an Oscar in the next decade, Foster would make the list. He would make the list.
100%.
Yeah. He might even make a top 10, honestly. Probably top 20, because you've got a lot of leading men who still need to. But the thing about Foster is he's the rare category of actor, this is what we said last week, where he's not like leading man handsome,
mm-hmm.
so, but he's good looking enough that he gets to play like a supporting character or best friend.
Yeah.
He will almost always be cast as the supporting character. He's the best crazy in Hollywood, right?
Yeah, he really is so good at that.
He's method, he plays, he's a total character actor, mm-hmm. and he's intense as fuck. Like, I wouldn't even be that surprised, though I don't think it'll happen, if he got a supporting actor nomination for Hell or High Water, the movie I just saw.
Right, you said he's great.
With Jeff Bridges. He's great. Like, it just, he doesn't have a lot of big scenes, but, like, I think that guy's awesome.
Someone just needs to give him a little bit more screen time in one of these movies. Yeah. Like, all of them, he gets just not enough.
Yeah.
For instance, in Alpha Dog, which is incredible. It's such a good movie.
Just Jake Mazursky in that movie?
Yeah, and he's so good, dude. He is terrifyingly crazy in it. And honestly, I think if he was in the movie more, he might have gotten a supporting for that, because it's his best. That's like one of my favorite movies of his.
He's like the crazy
older brother that's like had drug problems, and that's like why Emil Hirsch gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
It's like his fault.
Right.
So, and he's just, his parents hate him. He's, you know, he's that kid.
Yep.
We're already talking about Ben Foster. Let's get into his career right now.
Okay.
At the time. Good. So Ben Foster in 2011, he had just done Here, Pandorum, and The Messenger.
Is The Messenger the Woody Harrelson movie where he's the guy who goes to people's houses and tells them that their kid has died in war?
I think so.
I'm gonna look it up. I believe so. I believe it is.
So you look at this and he's not even in the same echelon as Statham.
No.
And Foster, this is literally his career. Like, if you look at movies like this, because Pandorum was kind of big.
Yeah.
Right? So he'll be in big movies all the time. He's in Academy Award winning movies. He was, you know, he's in, you know, when 310 to Yuma came out, for instance.
That's what it is. Yeah.
The Messengers is that. So I think he does a lot of his own indie work. I think that he chooses his films a lot because he takes acting so seriously. He is so method.
Yeah.
And in this industry, actors that do that don't work as much. And that's just how it is. And the films that they do, a lot of them just get kind of brushed under the rug. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis is kind of the exception for that the guy does a movie every 2 years and then just wins an Academy Award for it.
And then the same year as this, he did Rampart, also with Woody Harrelson, where he is he's like a crooked cop. I don't know who Foster plays. That's another one that I remember. That's and he's billed second. It's another movie I should see. But Here, Pandorum, The Messenger. I do kind of remember Pandorum, but I don't remember this part of his career all that well. A few years prior to this, you said 310.
Yeah.
He plays Charlie Prince, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like 2008, I think.
Was he also in The Assassination or no? No. He wasn't in that. Yeah, he was in that.
Yeah, Alpha Dog's probably like 2006.
Which I still think that's his best role. He's so good in that. Guys, if you're in the chat or at AMA Podcast, talk to us about your favorite Ben Foster role, because they're so interesting.
And then a couple years later, he does Lone Survivor. And then now, in like semi-recently, he's done Finest Hours, he was in, which was a little bit of a miss, I think.
I really want to see. It's getting released on Netflix, I believe, this month. And it's, you know, it's Casey Affleck, Chris Pine, him.
Yeah.
And it's about a ship that gets ripped in half out in these treacherous seas.
It's like
and
a rescue movie. It
looks sweet.
Yeah.
It looks good.
I heard decent things about it. And then also, he's in Hell or High Water. So he's I think he's kind of moving along to a little
slowly ticking up there.
Yeah, but he's sweet. He was in 6 Feet Under for a long time. I don't know. Liberty Heights is a movie that I loved.
Yeah, 6 Feet.
But so let's move on to Jason Statham. Different point in his career. The first Expendables was 2010. 13 was 2010. Do you remember that movie? 13?
I do. It's the card one, I believe. No, that's 20.
Yeah, what the hell is 13?
I'm gonna look it up.
And then Crank High Voltage, the sequel, in 2009. Yeah, his big explosion of those movies that we were talking about, Crank 1 and Death Race and Revolver, a lot of those movies. Transport sequels, that's all mid-2000s. So he got kind of revived a couple years ago, because Parker's like a few years back now. That's probably like 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago. And then obviously his inclusion in the Fast and the Furious franchise is like a huge boon. That's great.
Yes, you got all the Expendables here. You got Redemption. You got Parker, Safe, Killer Elite, Blitz.
Killer Elite's Blitz was one of them.
13. Yeah. He plays someone named Jasper. It's a very good name.
Yep.
Should we get into our AMA question of the day now, or should we wait till a little bit later?
Yeah, let's do the AMA question of the day. Okay. So this is submitted by Josh Ryan, Josh Ryan Sports, at Josh Ryan Sports. And is this Jason Statham's best starring role in an action flick? Is the question. Best starring role in an action flick. If you're going by starring, maybe, honestly.
You think so?
Like I said, the Transporter franchise is not a franchise I've ever really messed with. I think I've seen all of them on TV at least one time, but I've never really paid much attention. back in the day, like, he's not the star, really, of Lock, Stock.
Right, he's not the star of The Italian Job. He is the star of Snatch, though.
Sort of.
I really think, because he tells, I mean, he's the narrator.
He's officially the star.
He's officially,
like,
the star.
Nobody would ever be like, Snatch is a Jason Statham movie. It's they remember Brad Pitt from Snatch, not Jason Statham.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see what you're saying there. If I had to pick a movie, I would say Snatch, but yeah. if I'm not able to,
yeah.
which I completely understand that argument. Well, do you have yours?
Like, I think I would say the answer to the question is yes, because I like The Mechanic and his character. I think it has, like, it's pretty cool in a way that, like, I don't think the attention to detail is there with some of those older movies as much.
Bank Job.
They're, like, kind of silly. Like, I do like the Bank Job. I saw that movie.
Yeah.
It's
all right.
What I like about this movie and about him in this movie is that they did a good job. Like, he's got some pretty cool lines. Like, they set him up pretty well. I like his place. He's got, like, sort of an interesting point of view as a hitman.
Mm-hmm.
He goes for a little more depth. It's not Crank. It's not, like, as silly. But,
right. Okay. But, I think that's, I mean, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
And I can see that when you go back and you look at the dude's movies.
Yeah.
It's not like he has a lot of leading roles that are.
No.
They're all the same.
They tried with this one.
Exactly.
The music's cool.
Yeah.
He's got some sweet kills. It's kind of believable.
I think for me, it has to be Transporter.
Okay.
And I think the reason for that is because it was at the top end of him doing all this.
Yeah.
So I wasn't tired of it yet. Everyone loves watching Jason Statham drive a car.
Yep.
And he's sweet in there. I think for me, the Transporter is my favorite. But it's not because he has, like, he does better acting in it.
Who did he do commercials for? Like, Audi? I think he did Audi.
Was it Audi afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
You look sweet driving cars in movies. Let's just, yeah. All right. So thanks, Josh Ryan Sports, for your question of the day.
I've got one to add, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we talk about In the Name of the King, a dungeon siege tale.
Yes.
Directed by Uwe Boll. An amazing performance by Jason Statham. And you can hear us talk all about it on Video Game Movie Anatomy. That we recorded this past Monday on the Popcorn Talk Network.
There you
Thank
go.
You, Martin.
It was absolutely awful, but I highly recommend it if you're a fan of Jason Statham, just to get a little bit of perspective on
I remember
this man's
seeing
illustrious
the,
career.
The box. I remember seeing the box at Blockbuster. I never got around to that one, Mark. I'm very sorry.
Well, they made a sequel with Dolph Lundgren. How bad could it be?
Whoa, there's a sequel with Dolph.
Sounds like we got a watch along coming around, people.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a fan of that one. Let's get into production development. So, fun fact, the New Orleans house used in this film is the same New Orleans house as the house used in Lake House.
Starring Sandra Bullock. And Keanu Reeves.
A film I've seen before.
Me as myself as well.
Yeah. It's a pretty good film, actually.
It's not bad. The mailbox is the real twist.
That movie is just, I don't even know who greenlit that thing. That's like.
I just can't even, yeah, okay.
So let's talk a little bit about, it was filmed in Louisiana, New Orleans, shot for 9 weeks. The World Trade Center downtown New Orleans, the Algiers Seafood Market. It's a remake of the 72 film with Charles Bronson. So, Irvin Winkler and Robert Chartoff, I think Winkler is one of the producers on the original.
Mm-hmm.
Chartoff and Winkler are guys that we've talked about a little bit on the show here before. They've worked on things, the entire Rocky franchise, Creed.
Mm-hmm.
They've worked on what else in here? Like,
it's interesting that they had this one as a collab with the brotherly collaboration of this film.
Yeah.
You know,
you're talking about with the two of them. Well,
yeah.
Robert, it's actually not, Robert Chartoff's son, William Chartoff.
Or son, yeah. One's a father-son combo. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, but Irvin and David are brothers, yeah. I thought that was cool, too. But yeah, they're a lot of, like, the pictures they've produced, Raging Bull, Goodfellas, Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, the team has worked well on a lot of Oscar-winning films, so it's kind of a similar situation to, like, Man on Fire, where you have the old producers coming back to do the remake. You know, it is what it is. Like, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a free paycheck for these guys.
Yeah.
It's like they were involved in something a long time ago. They're going to reboot it with another superstar, and why not?
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny. Like, we were just talking about this. So if Bronson back in the day, like back in the day, in the 70s, Bronson was kind of like Chuck Norris or like somebody like that ended up being in the 80s.
Right. Seagal, the Seagals, the Norrises, the Van Dams, the Snipeses.
They're like mostly B superstars.
Yep.
Who get action flicks because they're like pretty menacing and pretty cool.
And they'll pop up in like a massive like feature film blockbuster A-type movie every now and then.
But they don't get starring dramatic roles.
They will never.
Which is what you need if you're going to be and I guess the pinnacle of that genre were the guys that really, in the era, the reason that there was the classic action movie era, that was Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. Those guys actually could take, like, they could open a movie at the box office and make the most money in the world, even though Schwarzenegger was not a dramatic actor.
No.
Neither was Balboa.
I mean, like, Balboa was in Rocky, but, like, in the other thing, I mean, there's a couple other things he has in there, but for the most part, he is not a very good dramatic actor either.
No, most of what he does is pretty garbage. Yeah. So I think it's interesting looking back to Bronson, and, you know, he wasn't Paul Newman. He's not Robert Redford.
No.
He's an action guy. And it's not that he couldn't, it's not that they couldn't play his role, it's that he would never get cast to play theirs.
Exactly.
And so I think it's interesting when you look at remaking a movie like this, it's like, it's been so long, I had never heard of The Original Mechanic, right? I didn't even know this was a remake till we were doing the research.
Right.
If you think about it, you're like, well, I guess you guys could have taken this in another direction. You could have gone a little more serious.
Mm-hmm.
This happens a lot, actually, with remakes. Like last year's film, The Gambler, with Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
Which is another movie produced by a lot of the same people. It's another 70s remake that just kind of...
It just came and went. And it looked good. It looked real sweet. I remember when it was coming out, you and I were like,
yeah,
this could be awesome, but it probably won't be.
Yeah, it was...
But let's see.
It was just okay.
Yeah.
I always find that interesting when the remake happens of the movie that was kind of forgettable in the first place.
Right.
And the remake is also forgettable.
So this was... That was another one of my theses, was that not even that this mechanic is the most unnecessary remake of all time. I think that the new mechanic, again, is going to be like the most unnecessary sequel of all time.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need to remake it, but you did it with Jason Statham and fine. And now you're going to make a sequel off of a movie that didn't make any money, that no one watched, and got horrible reviews.
Independence Day Resurrection, Mechanic Resurgence. Would you feel any differently about the films?
No. Yeah, and then you get into writers here, which is super interesting, because you got Richard Wenk and Louis John Carlino, and...
So Carlino is...
Here's my paper. Here we go. Wenk. Yeah, go ahead.
So Carlino is a guy who... He wrote the original film. He's mm-hmm. a guy that wrote mostly 60s and 70s films. A lot of movies that honestly... And I feel guilty about this as a movie buff, like somebody who loves movies and even loves old movies, but these are Oscar-nominated or at least like award-nominated scripts in a lot of cases for movies I've just never heard of.
Yeah.
The Brotherhood with Kirk Douglas. I've heard of The Great Santini with Robert Duvall. These are scripts that were worked on. But he mostly stopped writing in the 80s. And
right.
So he gets a credit here for the characters in the original script. On the other side, you've got Richard Wenk.
Which is crazy because this guy didn't start his career until he was in his 50s.
Yeah, I mean, he was working in movies, but he really didn't get his first major shot until 16 Blocks in 06.
Which is not a very good... That's Mos Def and...
Willis?
And Willis, yeah.
And he's done... The stuff listed here that he's done in the last 10 years, it's mm-hmm. like pretty high profile. Like... in the action genre.
Right.
16 Blocks, Equalizer 1, Equalizer 2, The Expendables 2, Jack Reacher 2, Magnificent 7, the remake that's coming out. Like, it's quite a few movies that are pretty well known, and he started writing when he was 50. So he's 60 now with, you know, a pretty hefty action resume. I find it so interesting because of the way we do this show, we come across a lot of these guys who work primarily in this genre. You have producers, you have writers that are just basically stuck in this genre.
Yeah.
And it's weird because you see the guys, there are the producers that cross over. There are guys like, I guess like a Bruckheimer or a guy like a...
our boy, Bruce Berman.
Bruce Berman, obviously, who's because he Village Roadshow, it's a money guy. But even like Joel Silver,
mm-hmm.
where it's like The Matrix is a great film, was nominated for Oscars. Saving Private Ryan, Gladiator. These are the kind of movies that some of these guys produce. But they also produce trash,
of course,
that we love, and
because trash makes money, you know. Sometimes, not totally. All the time. Simon West, this film was that's who directed this film. He's our boy from Con Air.
Yep,
and he's also our boy from a song that you all might know pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh, the lights! Oh, love it.
Yeah, so this guy,
y'all just been rickrolled.
Yeah, so no joke. Simon West directed the video for Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley, as well as multiple commercials. He really made his transition from commercials into movies with Con Air, which he got a ton of acclaim for. But this is after doing like big, like awards winning, like McDonald's and Sprite, AT&T, Super Bowl commercials. Like he was he was a big deal in the commercial world.
Yeah, Budweiser, Miller, like this guy had made a nest egg for himself doing that.
He won the Golden Lion Award for the Little Caesars Italian Feast commercial. I remember that one.
I just remembered it. I was like, this is going to win an award. This is going to win an award.
I remember sitting there in my living room and thinking, this is cinema.
This is a change in the world.
anyway, he originated the project for Black Hawk Down. That's a cool thing about him.
Yes.
It ended up getting picked up and done by somebody else. Because he had scheduling conflicts because he was directing Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
That was not a good decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he's done a bunch of sweet stuff. The General's Daughter was his follow-up to Con Air.
That was not a good decision. It's at Travolta in it, guys. Go check it out.
He's like, Simon West is like the... So Simon West has been talked about as the poor man's Michael Bay just right. because of Con Air. Because Con Air is so blatantly ripped off of like Michael Bay's style.
Yeah.
But as you watch more of his movies, he's just another Fuqua. He's just like another one of these guys. I hate to say another Tony Scott because Tony Scott's got more style, but like he's just another one of these guys who Gavin Hood.
Don't think he's a little? I mean, he's won an Academy Award for Rocky.
Simon West?
Oh no! I'm thinking of Irv Hoffman. Yeah, no.
Did you just have a stroke?
I was. I flipped the paper over and I was like, "Wait, this is impossible. This is impossible." But yeah, no, he is. He's that guy. And you're right. A lot of these guys, producers, directors, and actors suffer from just being stuck in their one genre forever.
Yeah.
And hey.
And they're rich. So
and they're rich and they're happy.
So speaking of shitty remakes, not that this is a shitty remake.
Not at all.
But I mean, but not really that. More speaking of like movies that these guys like to resurrect, these old scripts that you kind of don't really see coming.
Mm-hmm.
That some guy, probably over 50, watched a movie as a kid and it was like a cult classic and his producer buddy thought the same thing. And they're like, we want to modernize this for young audiences. Let's do it again.
Right.
Andrew and I have decided to do another top five this week. And that our top five... Bum-ba-da-dum. Drama or action films 2000 or earlier that deserve a remake today. We aren't ranking them, but we're throwing our five out. I'm stoked about my five.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about my five. Like, I would love to see all these movies to have been remade or to have gotten a sequel. I don't know. So let's just see what happens here. I want you to go first.
Well, I thought about a lot. So I thought about a lot of old stuff, like movies that were cult classics in the 70s and 80s that I really enjoyed that I've like seen once or twice that mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a pretty interesting idea. Like I thought about The Pope of Greenwich Village, for instance, which is an old Mickey Rourke, Eric Roberts movie. It's like just kind of like a little zany and funny and like not that great, but like entertaining. And I was like, OK, right. You could remake The Pope of Greenwich Village. But I'm also like, would anyone see a remake of The Pope of Greenwich Village? Would anyone watch that? Like, no one has any idea what that movie is. The look on your face, you've never even heard
of it. Never heard of it.
Yeah.
That's why when you're saying that, I was like, I think I'm one of those people.
Yeah. And I'm just like, as much as, that's kind of what I'm talking about. If I was that guy, that producer that's 55 and was like, I watched this growing up, I want to do it. I think that's why The Gambler gets remade. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's why The Mechanic gets remade.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like you said, this guy... The guy that wrote this didn't start his career until he was 50, so why not just start a career based off of all these movies you loved growing up?
That's a thought, but I ultimately went with franchises that are still like relatively familiar to a younger audience today.
Yeah, I went with pretty big names in mind, except for one, which also has Tony Goldwyn in it.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
It better not be Ghost.
It's not Ghost.
Oh, good. I'm going to start out with Bloodsport.
Nice.
Bloodsport 1.
They did make another one, didn't they?
Well, they just made not sequels. With him.
Yeah.
They made a bunch of sequels. They all sucked. They had this other action guy whose name I can't think of. He's like a straight action guy. But mm-hmm. I'm talking like remake Bloodsport like as a... Not
New,
even... Yeah. Not like Never Back Down. Don't put Van Damme in it. Put like an actual just like totally sweet badass action star and like stock the cast with good people and make it a good story.
Yeah.
Like Bloodsport, it's like the Kumite, man. You don't have to make it like a ridiculous joke of a movie. You could make Bloodsport just like John Wick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sweet. That's what the Kickboxer sequel, the reboot looks like it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
The Kickboxer reboot looks sweet.
Yeah. No, it really does.
So Bloodsport.
Okay. I'm going to go Mortal Kombat.
It's on my list, too! Is it? Yes!
It has to be.
And it's got to be on Donica's list, too.
It's got to be, because...
Bet your sweet ass.
It's Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Like, there was that live-action one they did. I mean, I don't know why I say live-action. They're all live-action. But the reboot that they did, like, the online web series or whatever, the short 10 episodes.
I think Machinima did it.
And it looked sweet.
Correct.
Yeah.
It looked sweet. I remember watching the trailer. I remember watching it and just being like, ah, damn it.
Yeah.
Like, when I finally did watch it, I was like... this is not it. And it's just set us back another 10 years.
It wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good. Like I said, the trailer looked good. It got me excited, but the actual production itself was just not good.
Got it.
I want to see a real Mortal Kombat movie with a sweet ensemble cast, awesome martial arts,
yeah,
and real, yeah, and scary.
It has begun.
Lord Raiden. Prince Goro. Yeah.
I forgot. We are fighting for the fate of the world.
Yeah, we are.
Your sideshow freaks attack my fighters.
Nice dress.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that it's strictly forbidden before the tournament.
That's a good Lambert.
You like that?
Yeah.
So, Mortal Kombat. I'm glad that's on both of our lists. I'm going to jump in with my next one, and that is Spawn.
Yes.
Right?
That's genius.
Because when we
Spawn.
When we put Spawn on last year.
So bad.
It like opened. I was like watching the credits. And because we both were like, oh, I watched this movie as a kid. This
was
sweet.
We were drunk and we couldn't even get 10 minutes into it.
Do you remember what happened? Like it started, the credits were rolling and it showed Violator. And I was like, so this is what this movie starts like. Huh?
I'm like, this is sweet. You're like, I'm not going to watch this.
I was like, I am turning this off. Michael Jai White is like, it's just like a bad movie.
Yeah.
Through and through.
It could Spawn the comics and just like the whole premise and the suit. Like, these are all things that are so awesome.
Again, it's one of those things where if you did it correctly, I do feel like Spawn could be sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go into Dick Tracy.
Oh. Because the original Dick Tracy is kind of shitty.
It kind of is. Like, it was very lukewarm from the critics. It's a cult classic. People love that movie.
If I'm not mistaken, Al Pacino got an Oscar nomination for Dick Tracy.
For the bad guy, right?
I think so.
And Warren Beatty it's like they still want to do a remake. They still talk about it.
The
people that are involved with it. And why not?
Yeah.
Dick Tracy was so cool.
I think I'm going to look this up real quick.
Yeah.
So Dick Tracy, give me one more and I'll...
Sure, I'll do one more and you can do two. My second one, this is the one that no one knows about, and I don't think it would do good now. I just have a soft place in my heart for this movie. It's Cuffs with Christian Slater and Mila Jovovich and Tony Goldwyn, who is not a bad guy. It's like the only time you see Tony. That was a third thesis statement that I had, that Tony Goldwyn is the second greatest shit weasel of all time behind the Xander Berkeley. Air Force One, anybody?
Dick Tracy was nominated for 7 Oscars?
Yes.
What the hell?
Yes. 7 Oscars. I remember seeing that. It was nominated for a bunch of Oscars. Didn't win any, right?
Yeah, Pacino got a nomination, but it didn't win.
Yeah, it didn't win any, and it was mostly just kind of brushed under the rug by critics and studios, but as an audience, we loved it. So those are the three that I have so far. I got Mortal Kombat, I got Dick Tracy, and I got Cuffs, because Cuffs is sweet, and I think someone fun, like two young, like... fun leading actors and actress would just be able to carry it. It's just like a feel-good, fun cop movie.
I never saw Cuffs.
Yeah, it's sweet.
I will go next with Lethal Weapon.
Interesting, because I thought about putting Lethal Weapon on my list, and I was like, you just can't.
Yeah, well, I would have thought so, too, until we did Lethal Weapon on the show, and I was like, this first movie is, like, really not very fun to watch.
It's true, and that was one thing with our list that we kept talking about, is our list made us look like idiots.
Yeah.
When it came to old school action movies, there's movies on there like Rambo First Blood Part 2, Die Hard, the original Independence Day that were all just in the bottom.
Well,
like,
Die Hard's high for me, but those
right,
other
for me,
three
it was lower.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. A lot of those older ones just like really didn't age very well. You know, even like, so the reason I say Lethal Weapon is because I know they've optioned the property. It's coming out this fall as a new show. You have Marlon Wayans. Marlon Wayans. Or
wait,
Damon
which
Wayans.
One? In the new Damon.
Damon Wayans.
Yeah.
Damon Wayans and somebody else as his co-star. And it's Riggs and Murtaugh, and they're making a show. And I mean, based on like the success of most of these like TV show reboots, it's gonna last 2 seasons and get canceled. Like, that's probably what'll happen. I mean, maybe it's really good, but like I didn't get a great feeling about it.
Yeah.
So I mean, Rush Hour, the TV show, I didn't hear a word of good things.
No.
About
it got canceled
that.
Really
got
early.
Exactly.
Exactly. So like that feels exactly like this. But Lethal Weapon, the movie. Think about the nice guys.
Dude, I'm
the
on
nice
board. I'm totally on board. I mean, like, you get Silver to write it.
Yeah.
And get, like,
you mean Black. You mean Shane Black.
Yeah, Black to write it, excuse me, and Silver to direct it. And, yeah, like, why not?
Yeah.
I love Lethal Weapon. Everyone loves Lethal Weapon. They don't need to make another one with Glover and Gibson. If they redid the franchise and they did it right, it could be the coolest thing ever.
I just point to Nice Guys. That's yeah. all. That's all I have to do.
Because I just can't wait to watch that movie again.
Nice Guys?
Yeah.
That's so good. Nice Guys was like the maybe my favorite movie the entire year.
It is my favorite movie of the year.
And like you could have just called that Lethal Weapon. Honestly,
you could have if you just threw in a little more action.
If you made Lethal Weapon, like you could have just made Lethal Weapon and then just like change the race and just change the characters a little bit. That movie would be close to just being Lethal Weapon. So I think it's doable, and that's why I say that's my four.
Okay, so wait, so recap your list so far.
Bloodsport, Spawn, Mortal Kombat, Lethal Weapon.
So we're both caught up now because I said Mortal Kombat and you jumped on there. I did too. All right, so my last one, it's a tough one. I got two. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go Con Air.
Remake of Con Air?
I'm going to remake Con Air.
Would you have Simon West direct it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think I would. And Malkovich died. I almost want to see a sequel.
You want to see Con Air 2?
I want to see Con Air 2. I think Cameron Poe got in some...
Is it possible that Malkovich didn't die somehow?
I don't think so. But like... I just want to, like, I love Con Air so much, yeah. And you know how much I love Con Air, and they do this so much with these throwaway action movies nowadays, like, you know, The Expendables is a great example of a franchise that is so self-aware and doesn't take itself seriously that I think that if you did that with Con Air, it'd be sweet.
Yeah.
I would love to see Con Air again.
My number five?
Yeah.
Speed.
I was wondering if you were going to say Point Break, just because the new one
was such a piece of crap. I say Speed, and Speed's a hard one for me, because Speed actually, when you rewatch it...
Jeff Bridges?
Yeah.
Is the bad guy?
Speed is really good, and it actually, of all the old movies we've done, Speed holds up quite well. Like, I don't think Speed has aged that badly. It's
Taylor Kitsch, Alicia Vikander, Jeff Bridges.
Who's your Jeff Daniels?
I was still trying to think of that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels could be...
Who's someone like... Your boy... Danny McBride.
What if Jeff Daniels was the villain?
Oh,
switch it up.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, Jeff Daniels is sweet as a villain.
I would love. I actually think out of all the things that we said, my top three have got to be Mortal Kombat, Speed, and Spawn.
Yeah, I think a Speed remake would be really good.
Yeah.
The only issue with a Speed remake would be like it has that thing going that I think none of the other movies on my list have, which is that. So when I watch Lethal Weapon, nothing about the movie's iconic. The characters are memorable, but nothing. There's no scene that's iconic. There are scenes in Speed that are very iconic, and I feel like if you didn't redo them, you would be kind of missing the mark.
Right, but like the bus jump, how do you do that now and make it better than before?
That's what I'm saying. You know? Bus jump, or like the scene when the bus explodes and the phone's ringing and he's walking and he answers the phone and the burning bus is behind him. Like,
right.
Those are scenes that they play in like... These are the famous, most memorable movie montages.
And then you got Daniels looking at the thing as it explodes. Like, yeah, there's a lot of scenes in there that are... Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to remake films.
Be a hard one to do. But I think they will eventually do it. So that's our top five remakes, guys. Let's move on to the next section, which is going to be critical and financial. Let's breeze through this so we can make sure we get to the rest of the games before the show's over.
All right, so we got... I'll do it real quick. We got this produced by CBS Films for a cost of $40 million to them. It was released in January of 2011. It only made $29 million domestically and $32 worldwide for a total gross of $62 million. It opened third in the box office at the time at $11 million, behind No Strings Attached at $13 and The Right, the horror movie with Anthony Hopkins, at $14
million. Those movies opened ahead of this?
It's a real dire time.
When is this? This is fall?
2011 in January.
Oh, yeah, January.
So it's like right after all the big Christmas blockbusters
came out. The doldrums, they just dump all the shit
there.
They just
really did. And like if you're looking, if you get third place at 11 and first place has 14,
yeah,
that's a real weird weekend, man.
So, Donica, if you don't mind blowing up this top 10 and then scrolling down just so we can actually see it, it's a little hard. This is the worldwide unadjusted. And
Statham movies.
So you can see Furious 7, just like all these guys, anytime they have a small part in some giant thing, that's his number one.
Yep.
But then you have Expendables 2, The Expendables.
I just can't believe The Expendables made that much money. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because you got so much star power, but...
Spy, Expendables 3. It's funny that Italian Job did as well as it did. I guess it was a very big cast. I guess it was a lot of people really liked that movie. Transporter 3, 2, Snatch...
Ooh, someone Death said remake Demolition Man, which I did think
that
about putting
would be
on my list.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The Star One Drew. With Jet Li.
Bruce Lee, excuse me.
I didn't
me.
Realize he was in The One. Jason Statham.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. So then if you keep scrolling down,
he's also in War with Jet Li.
Oh, War.
Yeah.
I remember that one. And then The Mechanic comes in at number 13. with, I believe, Expendables 1 is like, or Transporter 1, I think, is on there at number 17, a little lower. Yeah, Cellular, Killer Elite, Parker, the Transporter. There it is. Yep. Yeah, Crank, and then War, rounding it out at 20. So
it's just like...
Go get that money, man.
It's, yeah, exactly. Like, that's that's perfect. You said it perfectly. Critically, this movie is...
Thank you, Danica.
It's just rough. It's just real rough. So I got a 6.6 on IMDb, which is gracious considering its Rotten Tomatoes scores, which were 53, 32, and 51. That's all critics, top critics, and audience, respectively. Just terrible.
Yeah.
Just real bad. And
it does hit... No, it doesn't even hit our rule.
It doesn't hit our rule.
Top critics... The normal critics liked it more than the audience.
Than the audience, which is always bad.
It's a whiff.
We could have... I think we've already said it, but this movie would have been so much better if... Yeah. Ben Foster had found out sooner, and they used his acting chops just a little bit more.
Yeah, so you have Una LaMarche from the New York Daily Observer says, the mechanic is like a Beretta loaded with blanks, quick and brutal, but ultimately empty. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's quick and brutal. It's even the scene where he, which would have been my fist pump had her arm actually gone into the grinder.
Yeah.
Which almost still is kind of a fist pump because I didn't know.
Right.
I thought I was like, this movie's going to go there.
You're just like, oh.
I was like, this is R-rated. They're going to go there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I kind of wish that he had done it.
Yeah, me too, because the stakes was just like, really?
Yeah, like, make him a bad guy a little bit. He's a fucking hitman.
He's a hitman that murders people for a living.
For money.
For money.
If he tears up a girl's arm, makes him more, like, less likable. Like,
of course.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He shouldn't be likable.
I completely agree. So, on the other side of that, we got Stephen Whitty from the Newark Star-Ledger, who said, the new stunts are explosive, over the top, and a sign of the times. Action fans aren't happy these days, it seems, unless one... At least one scene involves a jackknifing 18-wheeler and a fireball. Stephen, I think you missed the point, brother. And I think the point is exactly what we've been talking about this whole episode, and it's the things in between the action. Because the action in this film was good.
Yep.
It really was. And it's the stuff in between that makes action fans not happy.
Right.
We like movies as well. We don't just like watching people fight. We like storytelling.
Yeah.
Let's move on to favorite line, which I know is tough for you and I.
On this one, it's just, this is a thin script, man.
It is. It's a very thin script, and it's not about the words.
Yeah, I mean, Statham at one point says, this is a line, this is the one line that I stopped the movie and wrote down, because I thought this was a pretty cool line, is he says, good judgment comes from experience. A lot of that comes from bad judgment.
Yeah, that was the second line that I thought of doing.
It's a cool line. It's a cool line.
Yeah, I like that. And then mine is from Tony Goldwyn, and it's, I'm going to put a price on your head so big that when you look in the mirror, your reflection is going to want to shoot you in the face.
Yeah.
Just like...
It's pretty cool.
Sweet writing,
yeah,
bro.
That's a cool line. That's a cool line. It's a cool threat. Guys, we're going to move on. We're going to skip ranking. We promised to come back here in the next couple of weeks with an updated rankings list. We'll add the 6 or 7 movies we've missed and kind of figure out a better way to show that to you. We're going to be probably meeting to work that out this week. So,
yes.
You know, follow along on AMA, on AMA Podcast on Twitter if you guys kind of want to see what's going on there. We're going to start trying to be a little better about, like, posting the list as pinned tweets so you guys can actually see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Keep track of it with us. There are 3 action movie categories. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. This movie's totally ridiculous.
It feels like it is.
Right?
It does. It really does feel totally ridiculous.
Category, I guess.
But I actually think it is the middle category.
It's just missing the compelling factor.
Exactly. It really is. But there's nothing about it that's unbelievable, like too unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, that really pulls me out of reality. I never laugh at it unintentionally. So by our rules and our guidelines, for me, I actually think it falls into the best category, which is the middle category. Even though I don't think it deserves to be there.
Is this movie, like, better or worse to you than, like, a lot of those low movies on the list? Rambo First Blood Hurt 2.
I think out of sheer principle, I would watch Rambo over this.
Yes, this is worse. Independence Day.
Fuck.
I know, it's worse.
I think it's worse.
Independence Day Resurgence, better.
This is way better than Independence Day Resurgence. Yes.
Yeah. Resurgence is the worst movie we've ever done. Taking Apollo 1, 2, 3?
I think this is worse. Definitely. I think this is worse. I think...
Regretfully?
Regretfully, yes. I do think that this is the second to last on the list for us.
It's close to the end. I mean, it's still... We're not doing movies that we hate on this show unless we totally make a mistake. So I don't think it makes it the worst movie ever.
I would still pick this movie over a lot of other movies that we have not done on this show.
100%. So guys, there's one thing left on the show, and it is called
The Pitch.
Wow.
I did one.
Yeah, we did one. Thank you, Danica. So
this is a fun one this week.
There's good ones. Do you want to go first?
Yes, because this is so close to my heart.
So explain why, please.
Lethal Weapon 4. Ladies and gentlemen, Mel Gibson's in a brand new movie called Bloodfather. It was on the poll last week. We didn't do it. Totally fine. Let's do the reason, one of the reasons I fell in love with Mel Gibson, other than The Patriot and Braveheart, of course, is Lethal Weapon 4. This is the first time that you really saw Jet Li, I feel like. As a person that was into action movies as a kid, this is the first time I'd ever seen Jet Li.
Before Romeo Must Die.
Yeah, this is like what started his career, because he was such a badass. He's got his little chain that he walks around with. There's like beads that he strangles people with.
Was The Mask? Was that what that movie was called? Black Mask? Was that before this?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Black Mask, right?
I'm not sure. It's something like that, or The Mask, or yeah.
I think it's Black Mask. Yeah. I saw it in theaters, I think, with my dad, because he liked
martial
arts.
Yeah, it's Black Mask.
Black Mask, yeah. I love Jet Li. I think he's so cool. I love this movie. I actually really like Chris Rock in it. I like Pesci. I think it's funny. I think it's good action. And
Black Mask, that one. Nice.
I remember the cover. But yeah, it's mainly just because Jet Li's so awesome, and the fight at the end and everything. So, guys, Lethal Weapon 4... That is my pitch. Ben, what is yours for the week?
My pitch relates to a new film coming out called Hands of Stone, which is a new Robert De Niro movie. De Niro seems to be doing some projects that actually look pretty cool recently, and this reminded me that we haven't done Ronin yet.
Yeah!
Fucking Ronin, man!
Oh, Ronin's good.
1998. Ronin is this awesome, like, he's like a hitman mercenary type of character. He's alongside Jean Reno. It's, I believe, it's written by David Mamet, maybe, or it's like... It's directed by, like, somebody pretty relevant. It's got one of the sweetest car chases ever.
Yes, you have talked about that car chase on the show a lot.
Yeah, it's Ronin's really sweet. Like, this movie is very, very cool. This was, like, Heat was 95, and I want to say 98 Ronin. This was the
98 Ronin, directed by John Frankenheimer and written by David Mamet.
David Mamet, I thought so. And this is, I think, the last really badass De Niro movie that ever came out.
And, guys, I don't know if you remember another film that David Mamet wrote.
The Edge.
Charles. Can't kill the bear, Charles.
I don't quite feel like myself, Charles.
I don't quite feel 100%, Charles.
So maybe there'll be some sweet mammotisms in there.
Yeah, maybe. But I hope Ronin or Lethal Weapon 4, I mean.
Yeah, they're both great choices.
Doesn't Chris Rock stand in the rain in an umbrella or something like that?
I believe that's just, a thing. I can't remember exactly. Yeah, it's in the beginning.
I like vaguely remember this movie.
It's so good.
Yeah. So those are the pitches for next week, guys. Go follow us on Twitter at AMA Podcast so you can vote along and submit your questions. We will post that today, and we'll leave it up for a couple days. We can let the poll run until Friday.
Yeah.
And we'll make the decision, and then what we'll be doing that next week on the show. If you guys want to find either of us, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram.
And follow the podcast, AMA Podcast, and of course, The Popcorn Talk on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you, Mark B. Donica.
Up in the booth. You, gentlemen.
And we will see you guys next week.
Take care.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.